You already love the Mixing Music podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Lufthansa Airlines.
Yeah, so I've flown on Lufthansa a couple times, and every time I read it, I'm just like, I mean, I should one day use this because it literally just starts with L-U.
Doesn't Floaty work as an engineer for Lufthansa in Germany?
I'm pretty sure that's
Floaty's company.
Is it Lufthansa?
I'm pretty sure.
I will say this, credit to them. You know, it's one of the things I actually really like about flying with them. They give care packages to every single passenger. And what I mean by care packages, I mean like you get an eye mask, you get a little toothbrush, toothpaste, and all that. Because they know like, hey, you're on this flight for 12 hours minimum. Like, right. So let me give you everything. They give you the pillow, the blankets, and all that. And I think that's very nice. But the way they give it to you is in... I wish I had one next to me, but they give you those like toiletry Ziploc bags, but they usually come from some kind of brand. So I have one that's from Prada, and I'm like, what the hell? When did they do a collaboration to just hand everybody these little things? And I realize they're cheap, and I'm sure it's like pennies on the dollar to make it, but you know, I just find it interesting that for the last like 2 years, I've been using the same toiletry bag that came on the plane.
Right.
Like it's good quality stuff. So shout out to Lufthansa.
German engineering.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this episode is going to be a little relaxed and kind of like off the cuff. We're riffing this episode, but I wanted to talk about like updates on our life, things that we're thinking about, technical stuff that we're thinking about. For example, I'll jump right into it. I've been, as far as like how my audio engineering, like technical perspective on this life is, like we've talked about before, like the cycle and evolution of engineering where there's like, at the beginning, at the very beginning, when you're starting to learn about engineering, it's all just hype and excitement and, you don't know the technical stuff. You're just like excited. It sucks, but you're like very excited. And then there's like this trough of technicality where you're no longer feeling the music, but you're just learning plugins and you're like hyper-focusing on what compression is, what EQ does, how it affects the mix. And like, you're kind of lose sight on the emotion of music because you're getting so focused on how to use these plugins, what the plugins are, what you like.
Yeah.
And then slowly you climb back out of this like trough of technicality back into this like plateau of productivity where you're starting to, by the way, these are my terms that I like to use based on the Gartner hype cycle, thing. Anyway, so, this plateau of productivity where it's like, okay, cool. We know how these plugins work. Then we're slowly starting to rebalance this emotional integrity of the mix alongside, like just using your ears alongside the technical know-how and repertoire that you have and the tools that you have, right?
Yeah.
So we've talked about that. And for a long time, I feel like I've been preaching a lot of like, just use your ears type mentality and vibe. Mm-hmm. And that's been really good. But the one thing that I've noticed is that if music is truly completely subjective and if it's all about feel, then what happens is that I've been feeling for the last year or so some sort of like this hopelessness and meaninglessness. And then what's the point about learning more?
Yeah.
If it truly doesn't matter, then there's no point about learning more tools, getting more tools, like comparing tools, having fun with your tools. And so I'm trying to come back to this state of like, all right, let's get technical again, but from a healthy place. Like I want to get really nerdy on like, you know, the electrical side of this hardware stuff or like comparing different
components,
converters and like, you know, and like reading these studies of like what's better and like kind of like allowing myself to believe that there is an objective better. For the sake of like that's the fun of it. Cause I mean, like when you really thought analog was better at the beginning stages and you're like, it's way better. You don't understand the nuance of it. It's fun to realize that like, there's so much to learn. Yeah. And then I found myself once like, oh, like analog is not better. Also, it's hard to tell what is an subjectively better mix. Also, we're good enough that like all of our mixes are getting accepted regardless of effort. And effort is almost no longer tied to, I don't know, it's like this, you know, like this weird place. It's like, I mean, it's not, obviously it's not like that, but like one-to-one like that. But yeah, I just found myself becoming like losing reason and meaning in trying to better my craft. Like I've plateaued on my craft, which is boring. It's like mixing was boring to me for the last little while. And I'm coming back to terms with getting excited again, like allowing myself to look into gear. I'm like looking right now. I'm like, I want to upgrade my interface. There's a couple pieces of analog gear that I'm like looking at again. And it's not even about like having that or like needing that to get better. It's about like, I have interest in it again. I'm back to watching YouTube videos, like comparison videos. I'm back to like learning new techniques. I'm like trying to get in rooms with other engineers. It's not about like necessarily doing that. It's about like the desire to want to do that. I'm like refocusing on becoming a better engineering and working on new songs again. It's like, it's kind of exciting. And I hope that continues to blossom more and more, especially as I've kind of like lost track on that the last year, which was like supposed to be a hopeful and empowering message. Being like,
no, it definitely comes off as that. Yeah. I got to ask, you know, you said you're watching videos comparison again. I know that there's people who are pro it, against it, whatever. But with that said, as somebody, because I feel like this changes also with maturity in the industry, which is we realize that a lot of content creators are just kind of regurgitating a lot of the same information. So there's usually going to be a couple standout creators who do things a little bit differently. And that actually feels very, very refreshing the longer you've been in it. Are there any standout creators who do comparisons or explanations, breakdowns that you enjoy from a more matured point in your career? You know what I mean? Because like when we started, there was like, I think, what was his name? Graham Cruiser? The Recording Revolution?
No, right. He was a huge deal.
He was a huge deal. Pensado had Pensado's Place and things like that. Like recently I listened to a lot of Dave Ratt, who, you know, he's a live sound engineer for the most part, right? But, you know, what I find interesting is he's just kind of like the kooky uncle. That's the best way I can describe him. Like when you look at him, he kind of looks disheveled all the time, but he's a really smart dude and he explains things. So he tries to simplify the most chaotic topics and shows examples and reasonings. And he shows the work behind it. Kind of like you would a math teacher's homework. Like, hey, get to the answer, but explain your reasoning and how you got there. You know what I mean? I really like him for things related to like system design and tuning. But like, are there any creators that you found recently that kind of stood out to you where you're like, actually, this is a bit more refreshing?
I'm not going to lie to you. Not really. Meaning
okay.
that there are a lot. I feel like here's how I perceive it to be. I feel like back in the day, it used to be like these two or three main people that you look at for specific types of content. Produce Like a Pro, Recording Revolution, Streaky. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like there is no like lead one, and it's so saturated, and it's good for as a content consumer here as a learner because now you have multiple different takes on the same devices, on the same ideology. I mean, I really like, the normal basic stuff like Studio Time, which is, who is that? That is...
Is that Andrew Sheps?
No, that's not Andrew Sheps. That's what's his face. Crap. Studio Time is that one dude in Nashville. Oh, Andrew Masters' other page.
Oh, is that him too? Studio.
Andrew Masters, yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, stuff like that, which is like, you know, Kush, I think is great. There's also just like a lot
the
of
Kush
like,
ones always crack me up.
There's also like a bunch of like non-influencers, like Jesse makes content. That stuff is like Jesse Ernster makes content. That stuff is good. You know, and it's less about like channels that stand out that are awesome, more like videos that are stand out and that are awesome. There's this other, I'm trying to find the name of it right now. There's this one page where he never shows his face.
Oh, are you talking about the puppet? Like,
no, no, no.
Are you talking about the dude with the monotone voice? Well, he's like, today we're going to be talking about latency and what it actually means to receive latency in your system. Yeah.
Yeah, a British dude that gets like really nerdy and technical.
Yeah, his videos are not that long, but like they're so specifically to the point of every detail that sometimes you have to go back in the video and re-catch what he said to understand it. Because he's trying to make it as consumable as possible, but they're very detailed, messages that he's trying to convey.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like him. I forgot the name of his channel. I was looking for it. I can't find it.
Yeah. But shout out to that guy. I know exactly who you're talking about. I like his videos.
I cannot find it. I'm trying to find it right now. Yeah. I cannot. You know, Sonic Scoop is always fine. Yeah. It's also like, there's also a big difference between people that are trying to sell something. For example, mm-hmm. like, I used to like Streaky, but now he like sells stuff.
Yeah.
Even now, it's like, there are channels, I don't want to like call people out, so I'm not going to. There are channels that are like obviously trying to sell something, mm-hmm. either a product, a plugin, a course, and like channels that are like, like they just do like product placements and stuff.
Yeah.
Those are less interesting to me unless I'm looking at specific gear and they have like good comparisons. But yeah, I like the technical stuff where, like, for example, like Jesse Ray Ernster isn't trying to sell something other than like his brand as a mixer. And that's like, I'm okay with that, where it's like, he's actually like trying to raise his technicality.
What I've enjoyed about his videos is actually like the non-nerdy parts, which is just like, listen, I'm going to show you guys how I handle a phone call with a client, you know? And that's, let's be honest, that's the main reason you go to an internship, learning the communication forms and understanding how to actually move in the business. Because there are those who are actively working like us. There are those who are looking to work, but I do find that not a lot of creators showcase like the actual process. And I did enjoy that he made that video where I think it's like, this is me receiving the files, making the initial phone call. I've done my thing. This is my goal on the first pass. Now we're going to send it off, let them review. This is how I handled the revisions. This was about like, I want to say like 2-3 years ago. But I found that one to be really cool that he did, just because it's like, hey, this is kind of behind the scenes stuff that nobody really showcases too much. And it's always case by case. So there's no real one way to do it. But it's kind of nice to kind of show behind the scenes. So I did really appreciate him creating that. And I remember I wanted to create a video kind of responding to things because I thought there was a lot of good stuff in there. I reached out to him and he made a nice joke where I was like, yeah, I just wanted to see if it was cool with you if I made a video just talking about it, just kind of pointing out some things I learned from it or anything like that. He's like, yeah, sure, man, check it out. That's totally cool with me. I guess the new thing is like just seeing if you even learn anything from it. I was like, I'm sure there's something to pick apart from it. And the cool thing is, yeah, there was plenty to pick apart of just differences in workflow.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's more, I feel like there's like less channels that I follow
mm-hmm.
and people that I'm loyal to as much as I just like to research what I'm thinking about. And there's also just like really useful information. It's not just useful information. It's also like there's a lot of contrasting information, which is great.
Yeah.
I think I'm able to hear about somebody's perspective. I'm also like able to take someone's thoughts and lessons with a grain of salt in like the correct way, like in how they mean it. There's a lot of channels that are like dedicated to comparing gear, playing audio through gear and hearing how it sounds, which is nice, right? And then there's also like people with like techniques that focus on techniques, and you can kind of hear or see what the, what people are into because the different personality types.
Yeah.
There's the type of person that's like, you know, trying to do like the easiest way or the cheapest way to get the most effectiveness, like cost maxing or like use maxing stuff. And like, And then there are other people that are like, they're just no budget trying to get the best possible audio and like, right? So it's cool. I'm in that phase right now. I'm thinking about, so the things I'm thinking about right now, we're done talking about that. That was a long rant on the same thing. Things that I'm thinking about right now is, I think, although it seems that the business of Atmos has plateaued quite a bit, has gone down. There's not half as much money in Atmos as when it first started. Mm-hmm. It still seems like investing in a cheap Atmos rig is more cost effective as far as like ROI than another expensive compressor.
Yeah.
So like, cause now I can, it opens me up to doing like add-ons for like labels and stuff. Like if they're probably not going to ask for Atmos, right? Being asked for Atmos isn't a very common thing, but if it does, it's like, okay, for a few extra $100, I'll just mix the Atmos. Another thing that I'm thinking about too is like, I've been asked to do this. I'm not trying to transition into this, but I've been asked to do some like cinematic stuff for like TV and film, which isn't necessarily Atmos.
Like the mixing of it or like in the creation process as well?
Just the mixing of. So, like I've had to do a 5.1 thing. Mm-hmm. And not quite Atmos, but like more other surround. I think it's like 7.1 or so. I don't remember what it was. Anyway. So I've done more surround stuff, a couple mixes. It's only a couple, but I want to be able to do that too. I want to be able to offer that. Not that I want to do that exclusively. It seems like if I want to do that, I need to pivot and transition into offering that exclusively to do more of that. But I have a lot of friends that do film and TV and like they want me to work on stuff and I want to be able to work on stuff. So like that's why like having an Atmos rig, then I can do like 5.1 or other various forms of surround alongside the Atmos music stuff. So that's what I'm thinking about. And then there's a couple like pieces of gear that I'm looking at that I'm really interested in. It's more about like looking into stuff again, comparing things.
Research diving.
Just research again, like having the emotional, the philosophical depth to be able to enjoy researching again, which is nice. I like that. I really want to do it. And I have like a goal that I'm starting to talk about that I've like written down. I want to mix, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it this year, but I'm going to try to mix 500 songs this year. And if I can't do it this year, then I'll start from January next year. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to hit 500 songs this year, which means that I'm doing a lot of things for really, really cheap or free, but I'm not offering that online. Just to be totally transparent for anybody listening, like I can't offer that online because I have a perceived value. Right, I'm in this really weird phase where if I just like post on Instagram, hey, like hit me up if you want a free mix, like that'll lower the perceived value of my, I'm afraid it'll lower the perceived value of my brand.
Not only that, but there's always the fear, justified fear of like, hey, if too many eyes see it, there's going to be a lot of people waiting for me to accept theirs as a free mix versus wanting to actively pay, which kind of cheapens the offer at the same time.
Right. I want the people who I offer it to feel the weight of the value, even if it's free. And I want I want to be selective and work on only the stuff that I want to work on.
Yeah.
But I am willing to do stuff, some stuff, very selective amount for free or stupid cheap, if it's good, if I want to work on it, in order to hit this goal. Because this is something that I talked about with you where I realized that in 2019 when I mixed over 1,000 records, like it was unsustainable, it was stupid, I was tired. I even had my wife prepping mixes for me just so I can mix more songs in a single day. There was something beautiful about that time, which was I was just in constant flow state. I was just working fast. I was figuring out my systems. I was just on top. I was trying new things constantly. And it was just like, I really enjoyed it. And I got really good during that time. And I want to, there was something I don't want to, again, it's not sustainable to do that. And it wasn't necessarily my best year as far as like personal happiness goes, because I was just so busy. I was drowning in it. But there was something beautiful about it that I'm not trying to, there was something beautiful about it that I want to return back to.
Yeah.
So finding the balance that way too, I want to do that.
Especially right now, like 500 songs possible this year, We have, what, 8 more months in the year, if you count April as halfway, or if not all the way done at this point. Because it's really hard. I think at this point in my life, once the month starts, I'm planning for next month. This month already began. There's nothing going on this month. I'm planning for next month. You just had your third kid. And with this goal in mind, like, I imagine there you have to kind of move a certain way to even make it remotely possible.
Oh, yeah. You wanted to talk about kids.
Yeah, like, because once again, like, the polarity of us, if we can phase invert each other, it's I have no kids, you have a fuck ton of kids.
By the way, three is not a fuck ton.
No, it's not.
In L.A., it's above average. It's an outlier for my age in L.A.
As a Mexican, you're still way below the bar.
Right. As like a Mormon from 1960s, I'm also like, I'm not even a quarter of the way there.
Yeah. Especially at your age. Like at this point, you should have had 10.
Yeah, that's right.
But dude, like I've spoken about it before where like, you know, for me, I waited and still don't have any kids because like I didn't know how I could even plan to manage that and try to do what we do in a creative field. You have made we can genuinely say it's a successful living and you've managed to do it all on your own, single income home and all that with three kids now. Like, so even hitting these, setting a goal that still passes the number of songs you're working on this year. Like mentally, how are you thinking of like the preparation? I don't know if you're like, I'm an overthinker. I might actually be like making it sound a lot more complicated than it actually is. But like what's going on in your mind as far as like, okay, fresh kids, new goals, you know, where are you at mentally?
Not much has changed. I honestly think, I'll be totally honest, I think the most difficult change was going from 0 to 1.
Okay.
That was the most, at least in my life, I can't say that this is what will happen to you. Mm-hmm. Going from 0 to 1 was the most dramatic change and the difficult change. I will say that going from 2 to 3, I thought I had really high expectations. I had people that tell me that going from 2 to 3 was the hardest transition because now they're outnumbered, you know, and things of that nature. But like, my friend who raised my mm-hmm. expectations, he told me last week, it's like part of the reason why I gave you that advice, telling you that it's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done is to make sure that, you know, have those high expectations to realize that it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's someone doing landscaping outside, so it might get a little noisy.
Don't mind me. I'm going to go kick their ass real quick.
Yeah. But I will say going from 2 to 3 has been almost, no big deal. I think and as far as like the thing that is like budgeting is different. I don't have, like, for example, in LA, the law is you can't apply to rent a place. It has to be like 2 people per bedroom plus 1. So if I have a family of 6, we can no longer get a 2-bedroom. Right.
Oh,
so we
I see.
Have to apply for 3 bedrooms.
And that's, is that a law where, cause once again, not childless dinks over here, you know, is that more related to like child services or is that just general policy that in LA, like you just can't do that?
I don't know what it is. I think it's like, I don't exactly know. We can Google this. You can Google this and let me know.
Yeah.
But from the last time I Googled it, it was 2 plus 1. So for example, in a 2-bedroom, the max people you could have in a household that can rent that place on paper is 2 people per bedroom. So 4 people plus 1. So 5 people max in a 2-bedroom.
Gotcha. Okay. So which, it's not again, a plus the one point per of that. Room.
Yeah, so it's not like point of that isn't to like oh no, I have to have a nicer place now, you know?
Yeah.
But it is like I have a little less option. And I was talking, I was listening to a podcast about this where like financial fear and is always changing. Just because you make $500,000 a year, there is some instability that you have to worry about. And there's like almost virtually no such thing as like complete financial freedom. Because by the time you're making $200,000, now you're like, are my kids in the best school? Am I in the safest? Like, there's this idea of like, there's a safer place to live. There's a better place to live. And I can't afford that place right now. There's, especially in LA where the income cap is so high, there's almost always something more that you can do financially for peace of mind.
Almost like a moving goalpost, would you say?
Completely moving goalposts.
Yeah.
Right. So in one argument is, oh, so I mean, there is a financial freedom, but it's just way more than people think. Mm-hmm. That's one argument. My argument that I like to think is like, no, peace of mind is something that is almost completely unrelated to income.
Gotcha.
In fact, that was like the Kahneman study that I read about like how like money influences happiness up until $75,000. That was like, I think in like 2009. So the numbers would be different now, and it'd be different based on state. But if you really look at that study, it's more about how, we as Americans are completely unsatisfied and consumed by consumerism, believing that money, like it's a problem of our beliefs and our values than it is about the actual state of income in America.
Yeah.
For example, like, so like one of the main arguments would be like, for example, in South America where their needs are less met, there are literally less food, less clean water, less safe places to sleep, yet their self-reported happiness is higher and their suicide rates among adults are lower. So it's like, okay, so it's the study is not about money equals happiness. It's about how we are so bad and have the wrong values of where we find happiness as Americans that it costs us that much money to be happy because our values are in the wrong place. But again, in the news and like, you know, for fun, people that read that study at a surface level or just like, just hear about that study, just the argument then becomes we need to have better jobs because money does equal happiness. But no.
Yeah.
That's not at all what the study is. If he reads it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about how ill we are, like the sickness of Americans and how we perceive. Hear me out. I will say this. This is a personal note.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I have been gifted, blessed, or I'm just as a person. I am the type of person that has a high, that naturally has a higher level of perceived happiness that, and more importantly, like I have a natural perceived satisfaction, like higher satisfaction. Like I have, I am hard on myself and I have been depressed. I've been suicidal even at different points in my life. But like in general, I am not consumed by envy or I am not covetous. I do not look at someone with a really nice house. Like, for example, we went to visit, this is something that sticks out to my mind, in my mind. We went to go visit someone who lives in an apartment, like a normal, you know, middle class, normal apartment in the middle of like these like insane millionaire mansions, like in this neighborhood of like, in Toluca Lake of like millionaire mansions. And I told them, like, it's crazy, like, all these neighbors that you have that they're in, like, huge mansions. And I was thinking about it from the perspective, like, it's really cool to see and it's, like, fun.
Mm-hmm.
And their immediate response, which shows their state of mind, right, was, I know, doesn't it make you feel terrible? And, like,
in what
when
context?
I brought it up in the context of comparison. Like the fact that they live in a humble apartment next to all these like insanely wealthy people.
Yeah.
And it's like, doesn't that make you feel terrible? And at no point in my mind was I comparing my own humble lifestyle to these. Like, I just thought it was like fun to look at.
Yeah.
So the point of this being to be like, I'm naturally not someone that compares myself to other people. And so I think that that's really worked out for me pursuing this. Cause like, as an engineer, it does take a humble lifestyle. As a single income father raising three kids in LA, like it's a good thing that I don't compare too often because that would make me miserable if I did. And I have to say that I feel, especially here in LA, where most people are consumed, even if they're identifying as non-consumerist, most people are, whether they understand it, realize it or not. And they compare themselves to other people's success in a way that like, I genuinely like naturally like kind of have a hard time understanding, which I'm not trying to say that that's bad. I think that it's human to compare and to, and I'm saying that I think something's wrong with me that I naturally don't. But it's worked for me because I genuinely like, I invite people to my humble apartment and studio and like not feel bad. I don't care. Like people like, I don't care about what car I drive. I take care of my shit regardless, right? Like people, I've had people like, comment on like, DK, your car is always clean and you take care of him. Like, yeah, that's because I'm like an adjusted, responsible adult. Like I actually am not like thinking about how I should be doing that stuff based on how others perceive me. I don't know. There's like this, I'm the older that I get, the more I realize that my satisfaction and my non-comparison character is unique. And it has served me very, very well as a father, as someone that, you know, is, and, but that's the thing too. It's like the average American would perceive my satisfaction as a form of complacency. And I think that that's like a good argument to make, right? Yeah. But it's weird. I'm not at all complacent. Like I still... you look at me and you call me complacent and that's just a dumb, that I don't know what else to say. Okay.
Yeah. So
like, I want to argue it. It's such a dumb argument. And it's funny, like, there's a difference between contentment and complacency, yes. But I'm like really tough on myself. And I expect more of myself. I'm not necessarily a perfectionist, but that drives me to be better. And it's not based on anybody else. It's not, I need to be better because other people are better than me. It's just that I am hyper curious. I am hyper driven myself. And those things have served me well. Sorry, Lou, I talked a lot.
No,
I
ran for
a long time.
No, but you said something that I wanted to touch on, which was people mistaking contentment for complacency, which I think is one of the factors that come into mind when we think of who's going to do well long term versus those that kind of fizzle out. And anything that they do, for instance, so the reason I think of this is because a friend of mine, well, he's now a friend, but, you know, my mom introduced me to one of her clients. She owns a barbershop in Highland Park, or her sister, my aunt owns it with my mom, whatever, blah. One of the clients came in, they mentioned that their son wants to get into audio. The dad doesn't know how to help and how to, you know, try to put him in the right room kind of thing. Right. And he's kind of worried that it's like, you know, compared to what other people are doing, he's just not there yet. And I'm just trying to see how I can push him there. And I'm like, okay, well, is he happy? Like, does he enjoy what he's doing? Like, what is it that he's doing? What seems to be the thing that gets him excited? He's like, he's always talking about like the next piece of gear, the next this, next that. I'm like, okay, but like when he talks about it, is it because that piece of gear is the best gear, or is it because he's excited about the technology or what he can do with it, or how it can simplify certain things and blah, blah, blah. He's like, he really gets in the weeds of it. Like this guy starts researching the parts inside of it. I'm like, that's a good sign. That means he's actually really happy and like interested. Like if it's coming from a point where like he's comparing himself and says, I need to buy this because so-and-so has it, those type of mindsets tend to fizzle out pretty quick because it's a never ending hole. Like you just fall in to this void that like, you know, whatever. But,
and there are like the select few that like never give in to that, the dark side of that stuff.
Yeah.
That are completely driven by comparison and they gain notorious worldwide success because of what I would consider borderline mental illness.
Yeah.
But that's very few and far between.
Yeah.
A lot of times,
like if you look at your career as something that you're building for longevity, but also because you genuinely enjoy what you do and you want to continue doing what you enjoy, like having a job that isn't as fancy as the next guy, even if you guys are all friends or whatever, doesn't mean you're not as successful or doesn't mean that you're not as well adapted to your industry or whatever. If you genuinely love what you do, there's not really much of an issue.
Right. And there's something to say about like how like I don't feel zero envy, right? Yeah.
No, we look at our peers. I know, at least I do. I look at my peers and I'm like, that's inspiring. I'm slightly envious, but it's the drive that keeps me going sometimes, where it's like, I want to level up just as much as my peers.
Right. I don't think the goal is necessarily zero envy, because envy is pretty useful as far as like becoming aware with what we are jealous of kind of helps us realize like what we value, right? But I'm thinking about the perspective like as a metaphor, like my kids, whenever we go shopping, I always take them to like the toys area to show them, like they want to look at stuff, they want to look at the toys. Not once have any of my kids, well, I guess it's just two, maybe now the third
not
one
not once
too.
Of any of the change. Three.
Yeah, not once have any of my kids ever been like, Daddy, I want this. Like, have ever had a tantrum over not getting anything. I'm like, yeah, we could just look. And they're like, okay with that. They like it. Daddy, like, look at this cool dinosaur Lego set. That's so cool. I'm like, yeah, it is cool, huh? And then he's like comfortable putting it back. And then we move on. And that's kind of how I perceive how I am. Like, I like things. Yeah. I look at things, but I am not one to be like, I need to have it right now. Yeah. Like, if I want to have it, my kids know, like, they might get it. Like, if asking for, like, I don't know. I don't know what I've done right or what I've done wrong.
Or what you haven't done.
Or maybe it's completely genetic, right? Like, this, I don't know what it is. But I kind of perceive myself like that, like, as a metaphor. I still want things. I still feel jealous of them. I'm just not driven by that jealousy.
Yeah.
I'm not driven by not having the gear that I want. Yeah. I'm not, like, trying to do better for my clients because I want to have more. No, like, I want to have more gear, but also I can still want to be better for the sake of being better. Like, I'm able to, like, I place my jealousy, my envy, it's not driving my decisions. I'm not reacting to those things. Going back to the kids thing, you asked about how to balance that stuff. Like, how's it going with all that stuff? I'm going to be totally honest. I have yet to meet anybody that I've connected with personally. I've heard of people that say the opposite of this, but I've personally never met anybody and talked to someone with depth that said having a kid hurt their career, that said having a kid wasn't something that had a direct influence on the improvement of their career. Like, almost everybody that I talked to said having a family, having kids has helped me focus on the things that matter and have helped me grow in my career in a more focused way. So it's cut off the things that were less focused. It's forced me. Sometimes it's forced them into situations that turned out to be better in the long run. And that's the thing too, I've noticed this, is that a lot of people do have a hard time at the beginning stages, but by the time they're older, they realize that that was actually it's like investment decisions. Like, that was the best decision possible. Because also at the same time, Lou, and this isn't specific to you, I know a ton of friends that are no longer able to have kids. I'm getting to a point now where, like, their bodies are not able to have it. They're spending tens of thousands of dollars on IVF treatment.
Yep.
They are now at a point where their age, they're not able to play with their kids as much as I am, because they're just tired more because they're older.
Yeah.
And like, there are good things and bad things about those. It's not one is necessarily better than the other, but those that compare, I think maybe the lesson is those that have a struggle comparing still continue to compare, even if it happens or if it doesn't happen. Maybe that's the lesson. My point is the fear to have children is actually at like a young age with money, making sure like you're stable, like this need to have stability, this need to have your life figured out before you have kids, I think is way overrated, completely overrated. I think it's like based on good rational decision-making, but it is way overrated.
Yeah.
I think like, me having kids young, me committing myself, it's not about marriage. Like, marriage is just, I think it's more like fully committing myself to a singular person through marriage, has completely alleviated this, this, fear and comparison at the cost of no longer being envious of a salacious lifestyle. Like crazy that I'm not like, I don't care when people talk about going to the strip club, you know, or like going out late at night and going to parties and stuff. Like, I'm like, it's crazy that to people that I'm like not jealous of that at all.
I've actually attributed that same thing where, cause like, you know, I've been with Anna 15 years. And in that timeline, you know, she's also like, you know, the same voicing that I'm sure a lot of people have, which is like, what if you one day meet somebody that piques your interest, this and that? I'm like, you know, the funny thing is, as much as that may be a genuine just kind of concern in everybody's mind with whoever they're with, it's not really on my mind. So, like, there's probably been moments where something's been thrown my way and just been completely oblivious to it because it's not something on my radar. Like, it's more of a distraction than it is anything attractive. You know what I mean? It's just having the ability to focus on your work without the distractions in between improves your work because you have stability elsewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think all in all, I think that having kids later when you're more financially stable and trying to work on your personal goals, if you have like high goals, like wanting to be an actor or a successful artist. Mm-hmm. I think that's like a rational thing to do. I will say that it doesn't mean that you can't do those things if you have kids. It does mean that it'll get a little bit harder. So you'll need to change your values and your focus, but it doesn't like remove you from the ability to achieve those things at a high level.
Yeah.
I think the rational decision to wait longer is a good decision, but it's way overvalued in this day and age. And I think us as a culture are coming to terms with it. There's even been a, Taylor Swift wanting to have kids is like,
oh yeah,
is culturally like significant. Like, it's stupid that like, the people like care about that, but it is culturally significant. Like this girl that's always been heartbroken that like cares deeply about love is all of a sudden like betraying the r/no kids, you know, community by like wanting to have kids.
The Reddit mods are living it up right now.
I forgot the name of the song, but there's a new country song about like, sitting in,
Is it called Dinks?
Hold on. What is it called? I Sit in Parks by Kelsey Ballerini, where it's like, it's about how she's comparing herself and like what it would have been like to have a family, right? Is it sitting on a park bench? Nope. It was.
So the idea is I Sit in Parks. So is the idea of the song like, you know, I'm over here just like thinking of what could have been.
Yeah, here, I'll read the lyrics. I sit in parks, it breaks my heart because I see just how far I am from the things that I want. Dad brought the picnic, mom brought the sunscreen. Two kids are laughing and crying on red swings. We look at the same age, but we don't have the same Saturdays. Did I miss it by now? Lucid dream, it's my fault for chasing things. A body clock doesn't wait for. I did the damn tour. It's what I wanted, what I got. I spun around, then I got stopped, and I wonder what I missed the mark, if I missed the mark. So I sit in parks, sunglasses dark, and I hit the vape, hallucinated nursery with Noah's Ark. They lay on the blanket and goddamn it, he loves her. I wonder if she wants my freedom and I want to be, and like I want to be a mother. But Rolling Stone says I'm on the right road, so I refill my Lexapro thinking.
Damn.
Did I miss it by now? Is it a lucid dream? Is it my fault? I'm not saying, okay,
hey, that's a very, I'm going to say as a dink, like I relate to the concept.
Right. And it could just be FOMO. I'm not saying one is better than the other. What I am saying is that culture is slowly starting to realize that doing the rational thing of waiting longer and having less kids is overrated.
Yeah.
Currently. It's not bad. It's just currently overrated.
Yeah.
People say that people that have kids young and have too many kids is dumb. And that's just completely, there are times where that is dumb. Right. That is, there are almost objective times.
I think that's case by case. Yeah.
But I think we're seeing it more and more. Like, I'm not going to talk about feminism. This is not the place, or I'm not the person to talk about that. But like, I think that in all around in my family, for whatever reason that are beyond my understanding, it's worked out for us. It's something that I've wanted. I've wanted to be a dad ever since I was younger. For whatever reason, even if the reason is I wanted to prove to my dad that he was a shitty father, like it's still like it doesn't matter the reason.
Fuck you, Dad.
Yeah, I've wanted to have kids, and I did. My wife wanted to have kids, and I did. We did.
Yeah.
And we're very grateful that we found each other quickly, that she was able to have kids, and that we were able to follow through on that. And because that's another thing too, is like not everybody who is young and of good mind and body is able to. Right. So there's a lot of things that we need to take with a grain of salt and understand context with. But so how do I do it? I don't know. I've always wanted to do it, and maybe my values naturally align with getting it done. Is it hard? Yeah. But I completely believe that hard things are not related to personal feelings of satisfaction and happiness. Yeah. Like the harder things get is almost. It's closer to creating happier times than it is to unhappy times. There's a threshold where it's like if things are too hard, it like makes you miserable, right?
Yeah.
To me, it doesn't matter. Things are hard, and for me, like my threshold of what things. How I perceive satisfaction and joy from difficult things is like much higher than other people's, I guess. Possibly, I don't know. But yeah, I have increased response. I've for sure, I look back at my life and I've noticed that the more I increase the level of responsibility that I have to hold, the happier I get.
Yeah.
Like without a doubt, my joy and happiness increases with increased responsibility. 100%. Even if at the current moment, it's miserable. Like when my kids shit on the floor and I have to wipe that shit up, it is miserable. When I have a responsibility to do something, even for something dumb, like I'm in charge of planning my friend's birthday party, and that's like kind of annoying that I have to do that, right? But if I do it, I feel good after it's done. Right? It's annoying and it's tedious possibly, but I'm thinking of beyond myself. I'm accepting this responsibility and the joy that I feel afterwards. And they say a lot with parents, like the days are long, but the years are short. And that's exactly what it is.
Yes.
Like people overvalue instant gratification, short-term gains, and forget that like joy and satisfaction is almost always long-term.
I was talking to the guys in the group that I was doing a show with this weekend, and security guard and the DJ were talking about, you know, they both have kids. They're at different age groups right now. Like the DJ's eldest child is an 8-year-old boy, and security guard's is now 18-year-old. And they were talking about that, you know, like the days are long, years are short kind of thing, where he's like, man, you're at that sweet spot right now where he's just running around. He still looks at you like God and stuff like that. Like there's nothing you could do wrong at this stage. But, you know, once he's 18, he's like, I'm kind of finding it really hard to be an empty nester because like I'm a single dad. I'm this, that, blah, blah. But he's like, but holy shit, man. Like I watched this kid grow up and I didn't realize how fast he grew up. So he's like, man, just I'm telling you, as somebody who has an 18-year-old kid, just enjoy that time you got. I know it may be annoying sometimes. And to be clear, DJ never said it was annoying. But, you know, hey, kids can be kids sometimes, you know. Sometimes you're just going to be a little frustrated. But he's like, but those are like the best years. Because he's like, those are like the complete innocence years where like they're just kids. They're just running around. They just want to have a good time. And they know they can reach out to their parents, or hopefully they know they can reach out to their parents to want to have fun together.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say this, and to put a cap on this conversation, this part of the conversation, like, I don't know because I'm naturally not like this. Naturally not. I pride myself in being thoughtlessly authentic.
Yeah.
Like in my prime state, I am not thoughtfully, I'm not thinking and I'm being authentic a lot. It's when I'm overthinking and thinking that I'm no longer authentic, but I'm really good at being authentic, I think. Saying that is kind of hypocritical, but that's funny.
You hypocrite.
But I do think the problem is not that people have kids young or people wait for their career or whatever. The problem is, I don't think people are open. I think you should be open-minded enough to follow your heart.
Yeah.
That's it. Because the problem isn't that you waited too long to have kids or you had kids too early. The problem is that society told you and these cultural incentives told you that it's smarter to wait, even though inside your heart you've had to deny this feeling that you've wanted to be a father.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Or a mother, a parent. It's not about whether one side is wrong. It's about being too close-minded to follow your own heart.
Yeah.
Being so inauthentic that, because like, for example, like maybe having kids was the harder path for me. Maybe I am objectively, like if we were to go to a parallel universe where I didn't have kids, maybe I am worse off in this universe. But the thing is,
too much time on your own hands.
But the thing is, because I followed my heart and I did exactly what I did, regardless of what society told me of, I was just being authentic. There is zero regret.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And like, if someone truly followed their heart and did the whole no kids dink thing, and mm-hmm. if that was really what the heart was telling them to do, then there would be no regret. Furthermore, they wouldn't have to say out loud that it was better to have a decision. Because to have the opinion that it's better to have kids mm-hmm. Means that you've thought about it. And you don't think about stuff unless you feel something.
True.
Then this is like basic psychology of like projection. Like the one that hates fat people vehemently, like probably has some form of body dysphoria. Like the dude that like hates pedophiles, like a crazy amount, is probably a pedophile. Like that's just basic projection 101. You know, struggles with like
I
the
don't
one
know if
that
I
hates pedophiles
so much with that last one.
No. Hear me out on this. Yeah. The one that like it's normal to not like pedophiles, but to be like that's all you think about, and everybody's
a
pedophile.
Okay. Like beyond the threshold of what could be
beyond
considered
normal. If it's
okay.
beyond normal, then it's typically a projection, right?
I was about to say, I'm like, I think that's a pretty universal thing we could agree on.
They themselves struggle with the temptations of pedophilia, so they think it's a bigger deal than it actually is.
I get that.
Right.
Yeah,
so like someone that believes that everybody is lying is probably a liar themselves.
A Streisand effect it's just, kind of mentality.
Yeah. No, that's a different thing.
Like,
but I mean,
yeah.
But I mean, like, this is just projection, right? So like the one that says like, it's one thing to be like thoughtlessly being like, oh no, I think it was better to be a dink, right? Versus someone that it's like, no, like it is way better. And to have like this really weird, strong outlier position that's stronger than the debate actually cares to have. Like, I think that speaks a lot more to your heart that like you regret something. You don't think about that stuff or have a super strong opinion by not regretting it, you know, like, so that's the thing. So it's not about the decision that you make. It's about following your heart and being open-minded enough to know what you want. And if, listen, if the vernacular and the syntax that you need to use in order to connect with your authentic self is to use words like God and revelation and like seeking the guidance of the spirit or like meditating, surpassing ego, therapy, whatever it is, as spirituality, rocks, and whatever it is. The point is, it doesn't matter the medium. And I have my own opinions on mediums, but it doesn't matter the mediums. Like becoming comfortable with your authentic self and not... and realizing that you're normal or you're different and it's okay. And just following what you think is right regardless. Like if you do what you believe that is authentic to you, there will be no regret, even if it is something objectively to regret.
Yeah, because it's literally just you being you.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just...
I think
I
there's moments of self-doubt in everybody though, even in cases of authenticity, because that's... just a natural feeling too.
And here's the thing too, and I'll be totally open and self-aware and say like, is my love for children and family and talking about this, am I actually covering up a regret? And the thing is like, to a certain degree, I wouldn't know if I was. Like, am I being so vocal about, I'm not so vocal about it because you asked me about it. That's why I'm being vocal.
No, totally. Yeah.
But I'm not telling dinks that they're ruining their life, right?
How dare you?
But like, I don't, here it is. If I was like having some form of like egoic inflation or psychic inflation about this. Like, I, first off, I wouldn't be able to tell myself, but I'm going to tell you right now with that as a caveat, I'm going to tell you right now, like, I believe myself that it's more about me being authentic to who I am and the things that I wanted with the values that I have in my life or that were given to me, regardless mm-hmm. of choice and agency. I think it was better for me.
Yeah.
And I have the ability to understand that that may not be better for everyone. I think from this objective point of view, where I'm trying to stay open-minded, I do think that current modern day American society overvalues the rationale of waiting longer. Yeah. And I've seen a lot more people that regret from waiting than regret from having kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's changed with the times. And I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but the incentives are a little bit unbalanced right now, the yeah. cultural incentives. So, yeah. I don't think I have this like huge existential humans need to reproduce in order for society to get better. Like, it's this huge epidemic of childlessness. I don't care about that sort of stuff. I just think on a personal level, it's like, it's better for each individual if that is capable of, that wants to have kids, to go for it without fear.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lou, sorry, that was really long. And I think it's like a metaphor for a lot of other things too, including pursuing music. It's like,
yeah,
I think
it is.
Those that do well, like, I don't think that those that do well in this industry have actually thought as much as people think. Like, it's not this like
yeah,
thoughtful
to be honest,
adventure.
Like, most people that do really well in this industry genuinely just have a love for what they do. Because this is not an easy industry to justify. Like, going through it and coming up in it, I think we can all agree at a certain point in your career, very early on, you're attested with the question of, do you want to keep dealing with this? Because there are certain things that like a common issue a lot of people have is payment schedules varying from client to client and the method in which you get paid and how you invoice and what you're invoicing for and the value of your work. How do you scale up? How do you do this? How do you do that? You really become your own boss at a certain point. Some people start at a studio and the studio dictates certain things for you, but then there's a time where you need to leave the nest, so to speak. You either fly or not. But I've seen where people make the decision to say, you know what? I like what it is, but I think it's better in my life for it to be maintained as a hobby than it is to be maintained as a career, because there's just parts of this that it's just not for me. And a lot of times I hear that it's the invoicing, right? Like, the invoicing alone sometimes is like just the breaker for a lot of people. For some people, it's the varying level of personalities you run into, because we are in a creative industry, but you know pretty early on if this is something you genuinely want to pursue any longer, because all of this becomes very apparent early on. You know, and those that have been here for, you know, most of our friends at this point have been in this 10 years plus. I think most people would leave within the first 2 years. I think beyond 2 years, you're starting to get into the realm of like, I could see myself doing this much, much longer. It's almost like getting married, really. Where like, listen, I don't know everything that my spouse is going to become in the future. We're going to grow. We're going to change personalities over time. But I want to move in unity with you. I want to grow with you and adapt. You kind of have to accept this career almost like marriage. Like, you don't know what's coming next. You don't know what twists and turns you're going to have to deal with. But if you genuinely love what you do, it's almost a non-issue.
Yeah. So I think the baby thing was like a metaphor to something beyond families, right?
Yeah.
I do think that, like, I was thinking about this as you were talking, is like, it's actually good. Like, I don't think it's bad to have to constantly believe grass is greener on the other side. Like, that's not a bad thing. Going back to the jealousy idea, for example, like, there's some people that like really in their heart want to pursue a music career, but the thing that is heavier for them is like, they come to a cross a fork in the road, or what feels like a fork in the road, where it's just like, okay, I actually want to have a family and like a regular, what is it? A predictable career.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get a job. Even though I want to do a music career, I want to have a family more. And like, and then you're going to regret not like pursuing your music career. But like, if you followed your heart and did the thing that you wanted more, which was to have a family, like, it's not bad to like, you might have to pick between things. Like, I still want to live in Japan. Like, that is the one thing that the grass is going to be greener on the other side. But I also understand it for what it is. It's just, that is never going to change. And if I move there, if I move to Japan, I'm going to complain about Japan. And I'm going to be like, I wish I stayed in America. Like, that's just how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's not about removing that, the grass on the other side, or removing that desire to want to go see that, the grass on the other side. It's about accepting that, yeah, that's there. But I did follow my heart. I am doing what I want to do. This is the better decision. And there, because you can't do everything. You can't follow, like, your heart will make you want to pick. And it's hard sometimes. Right? But that's not bad.
I think as you progress through whatever decision you make, there's always going to be the hindsight kind of mentality of like, well, if I had done this, I could have maybe done this. Maybe I could have done this. Maybe could have done that. But looking back in that type of way, it doesn't usually help. Like, it helps if you're trying to avoid repeating a mistake, right? But if the idea is like, well, maybe I should have had a family instead of like followed the career, this and that, blah, blah. It's like, listen, in most cases, it's not too late, to be honest. Like, if you had the family first and then wanted to do the career later, I'm sorry, but working in music does not have an age. I mean, sure, you could say trying to be like the next pop artist, whatever. Maybe there's some ageism going on there. But realistically speaking, some of our favorite and most respected engineers are just the oldest dudes in the game. And not all the oldest dudes started when they were 18. Right. You know, some guys started later or transitioned from another side of the industry. You know, but realistically speaking, do what you do. And like you said, just be authentically yourself. It should be fine.
Yeah. And I like the phrase, the attempt to be authentic is already in itself inauthentic.
Yep.
I think it's more about like, it's not about chasing authenticity. It's more about letting go and allowing authenticity. Yeah. It's about like learning to not care. And as someone that, I mean, there's people that have had it much worse than me, right? But yeah. I'll just say that, you know, my nervous system has been affected by my upbringing at the very least.
Yeah.
But there is still, with some effort or even sometimes a removal of effort, I've been successful at being authentic at times. That's only a commentary I'm able to make after the fact, when I look back and realize, oh yeah, those were like a very authentic decisions or authentic part of my life. It's not something that I can do in real time. I can't be like, let's make this more authentic decision to do this.
It'd be more authentic if I made this decision.
Yeah, right. This is the real me if I do this.
The real me likes blue, but the fake me says red.
Anyway, sorry, we went on a really long rant about a bunch of nothing. It was meant to be about technical stuff, about things that we're into.
Or just really life update and movement in it.
Yeah, this ended up being kind of like a diary episode of things that are going on, which was one of the original intentions of the podcast, was to be kind of like a personal digital diary for myself. In different stages of my career that people can follow along with. But that's the point of life that I'm in. Number three. So, I mean, it's not even been a month yet.
Yeah.
But number three's
been good.
It's
literally just been a few weeks, if not, what, two?
Number three's been good. Yeah. Number three's been good. Things are fine. No real big changes. I'm trying to be less not critical. That's the wrong word. I'm trying to, I'm like very overly reflective right now. And I'm trying to notice if I'm like more satisfied because I have another kid. Like how have I changed because of my kids? And because like, I'm really thinking about trying to be observant of how I'm changing because of this, I'm not feeling the changes as strongly.
Do you,
like I haven't self-realized or actualized.
But what is it when the subject knows they're being observed, they change the way they move?
Right, of course.
So by being observant of yourself, you're also adapting the way you move?
Yeah. So, yeah. Exactly, possibly. So, I don't know.
Would that in turn make the way you move less authentic at that point because you're observing yourself versus
less about being authentic because I'm not really making big decisions. It's more about I'm not allowing myself to fully feel because I'm observing what I am feeling.
You know, a bullet to the foot would help that. Maybe not in the same way, but you definitely feel something.
It's strange. It's like the more people ask me, how is it? How do I feel? The more that I reflect on the things that I'm feeling, the less that I feel them. And that's something to ponder about.
Maybe it's just an idea of like going through the motion because now you're on round three.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but I do think that what I'm feeling right now is fairly paradoxical by nature. I don't know why. But anyway, it is awesome. It's fun. She's cute. She's perfect. Well, I don't know about perfect, but like she's cute. We enjoy her. The boys are being really soft with her, gentle with her. She's being relatively gentle with us as parents as much as she can be. Mama's making milk just fine and we're living just fine. For the last half a week and for the next week and a half, 2 weeks total, my mother-in-law is in town from Japan staying with us. You know, that's been really weird because, we've never had family nearby. Nobody's ever helped us raise, after we've moved to California, nobody's ever helped us watch the kids. Like even when we had the
baby. You've been out here, 5 years?
Yeah. Even when we had the baby, we dropped the boys off at like a friend's house. So it's like, it's weird going from mentally preparing and like being comfortable with not having any family nearby to like 2 weeks of like, oh yeah, we're allowed to let her help. Like we can relax a little bit. So like Kaiko and I are like, should we go on dates?
Right. It's kind of funny because I've had this conversation with people where somebody did bring up once a fear that when they had their first kid, the husband's biggest fear was like, I'm having a kid because I know my wife wants a kid, but I want my wife more than I want a kid. And he's like, I hear a lot about like people struggling through relationship differences. I'm like, listen, man, if there's one piece of advice I can give you as a guy with no kid, but still would heed my own advice on this one. Just never stop dating, realistically. Never stop looking at your wife as your girlfriend kind of thing. Like it doesn't matter how long you've been together. Like just don't stop going on dates. If you got time to go on a date and you got some support, DK, I'm just take Kayako out. Go, get off this podcast and go take her on a date.
Yeah. I want to. We probably will. We usually go on dates every Thursday afternoon while the kids are in school.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of we do like a little cafe or a little lunch.
Yeah.
But we haven't, with the new baby and all, and her being hyper pregnant and the kids being out during like spring break and stuff, we haven't gone in a while, so we should.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a movie together because we can't do movies while the kids are in school because the matinees are not early enough.
So
we just usually do lunch. So we might do a movie. Maybe take her to a concert. Ooh. Anyway, thank you for listening into a diary episode, this more reflective episode. Sorry, Lou. I wanted to ask you more about the things that you're focused on, the technical things that you're working on as you've transitioned into live sound. Maybe that's another episode.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be another ding. We've got time for that. I don't leave on tour for, a month.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there anything you wanted to, like, did I fulfill the your questions of the soul with no, the yeah, parenting
it,
stuff?
Because on my end, it was more questions of, one, checking in as we normally do with each other, right? Right. Two, it's I think it's a question that a lot of people have that is just kind of like, once again, we talked about like the YouTube videos earlier about like how I appreciated like Jesse's video on like the mysticism behind the mix, like phone calls, delivering files, you know, interpretations of revisions and how to go about that. Well, having a kid while working in a creative industry is another one of those behind the scene things that you don't really see people talk about too much. And usually when they do, they don't really dive into the mindset that they're going through at the moment. So, you know, I think this is, I think what I was asking for, I got out of this episode.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that's kind of it. I think the only other update is, I want to get an office space, your old office space in that office building, which by the way, yeah. You saw that.
I saw the link. I sent you. Wow.
So there's a news article, not just a news article, but I think there's like a video about it too. Of like hospice fraud in LA. And now they're auditing all of the hospice businesses because there's been a lot of like fraud with tax dollars about it. I think
there's 100 of them based in New York, but in California alone, there's like 2,600.
Yeah, it's a huge number. And a lot of them were in the office building where the old studio was.
Yeah.
And we knew about it. Like, that's been happening for a while. Like, a bunch of these empty hospice offices.
We wanted to take over to build the studio and expand it were taken over by hospices where, like, you never saw a single employee walk in.
Right. I think the fraud is, if I'm not mistaken, what I've heard from, this was years ago before this became a popular conversation, was that you have to, in order to get like a hospice license, you have to have a dedicated office address.
Yep.
And so these people would rent these rooms and basically not use them at all to get the license. So then they'd have a licensed hospice business and then sell the business with the license.
Yep.
And then do it all over again. I think that's what it was.
So there was a from somebody else that was in the building. I had talked to them. They explained it to us. And what they were saying is like, I guess there's a couple grants that you can get.
You can start even make money.
You can make money from starting it and then sell it. And so now you've made the grant money, but you sold the business. So you're no longer responsible for it. But then when you do it again, like the only thing is you have to have the office for like, I think it's like 6 months. So it takes time to develop it. But then those that really want to be in the hospice industry want the license faster. So they buy that empty business with the address and everything. So they keep bouncing addresses around. So it's not the same person at the same address doing it over and over again, but rather it's the same person at multiple addresses doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so our building that we were in was on the front cover of this news article. And that's the link that I sent Lou, which is great because I'm waiting for your old office space to open up. And there's been a ton of rooms that have been opening up because people have been, because they're afraid of the audience, they've been leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you sent me the link and I saw the first photo. You know, like on Apple Messages, how the link will show like the primary photo and stuff to whatever you're sending. And I saw that building was the front photo. I was like, ooh, that's bad. That's bad publicity for the building, at least for hospices wanting to move in. It's like, maybe don't go to that building because they're already showcasing that one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Anyway, this isn't even a political thing. It's just funny that we saw that.
Yeah,
it's a bipartisan thing. It's a bipartisan thing to want to eliminate fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny that it just happened to be in the building that we were in as like one of the main culprits. Oh, yeah. All right. Let's see. Anything else? That's it. I was going to say the next move is to open up this bedroom so we can have more bedrooms in our apartment. Mm-hmm. Available for like living space, and then get an external office, or we're gonna move to a house with another bedroom or a garage that I can turn into a studio. Yeah. So that's probably the next move. Although we'll probably not do it for... After Kayako and I, we actually applied to a couple places or almost applied to a couple places a month or so ago. But after talking to Kayako about it, it sounds like we might want to wait a little bit for various different reasons that I won't discuss on here. It's very exciting. I think it'll be, I think the thing that'll probably likely happen is that we'll stay here and I'll just get an office space first. Cause like the main thing is like rent prices are going down.
People are leaving LA, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And we're like also just waiting for like the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I feel like, so where we're at, me and Anna, I really like it, especially considering the amount we pay for it. That being the key thing, like the value we get based off of what we pay. You know what I mean? If we were paying 50% more, I'd kind of question the value of it. But where we're at right now, I'm just like, that it's an undeniable thing. Listen, the neighborhood is less of a factor considering the dollar amount we pay.
Right.
But if we were to move again, I have very specific things that need to be hit for it to make sense at a certain price points.
Right.
Not because like I'm looking at, like in your case, you're looking at like school districts and things like that. I don't have any kids, so that's not a factor on my end. But like because of my line of work where it's like, hey, you know, I have to be able to like get my equipment in and out of my place. Or is there storage? How do you get to the storage? What's the safety of storing things in that area and blah, blah, blah. Or am I going to have to get an external storage unit? You know, there's other things that I'm factoring in more for my work than it is like for family life. So everybody's, you know, viewpoints on when is the right time or where is the right place is different. But if there's a way to get more value out of where you're living, and waiting is the only thing you really had to do, that's A1. Like, don't rush the move. Especially because you're going to lock in what? I think most rental agreements are minimum 1 year.
Yeah, 1 year minimum usually.
Yeah, so if you could have waited 2 months for a price drop, why wouldn't you?
Right.
Yeah.
There's also, the big thing is like, as a self-employed person,
the application process.
I could submit that I'm making this much money per year, but unless I have 2 months back to back that can prove that I'm doing that or even more than that.
Yeah. Like they can only do end of year numbers and that's it.
Proving income.
Yeah.
It's hard to compete as a self-employed person versus people that have like W-2 jobs.
Yeah.
I've actually applied to a couple places, but we've been outbid by people with W-2 jobs, which is crazy because I have like an over 800 credit score, which is like stupid.
Yeah.
So like, but whatever. We're waiting. I have things to talk to you about, Steph, later, but we'll finish the podcast. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Music Music Podcast. If you want more technical episodes or just ad-free episodes, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and subscribe to our Patreon, $4 a month. You get ad-free episodes that come out every week, and then as well as bonus technical episodes that come out every single week. So go check that out, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Just go to mixingmusicpodcast.com to check out our sponsor, see what discounts we are running for our sponsors and how we can help you save money if you're going to buy stuff anyway. If you're going to buy something on Sweetwater this week, just keep us in mind because go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/Sweetwater and then it'll add the cookies to your browser tells Sweetwater that they owe us money. They give us commission for the sale.
Yeah.
So, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. You already love the Mixing Music podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today.